Leviticus 13 tonight and Leviticus 14 next week. These are both chapters dealing with the topic of leprosy. They are long chapters. Chapter 13 that we're looking at tonight is actually the fourth longest chapter in the Bible. The only Bible chapters longer than that would be Numbers chapter 7, Deuteronomy chapter 28, and of course, Psalm 119. So it's a long section. The Lord has a lot to say about leprosy. The first thing that I think you need to know going into this study is that not everything that is going to be referred to as leprosy in this chapter is the kind of leprosy that we would consider highly infectious and deadly, dangerous, fatal. There are some forms of leprosy in this chapter and during the ancient era of Israel that were neither infectious nor fatal. So these two chapters of law are given by God to help them root out the dangerous leprosies that existed at that time, the leprosies that were either infectious and or could be fatal to the person that developed them. And the reason that he does that is in order to protect the nation. It's all about protecting their health in these chapters that we're studying. And you're going to see that God gets very detailed with these detections and diagnoses of leprosy because he's not only concerned about making sure that those who are leprous are identified and then dealt with properly, but he is also concerned that people would not be misidentified or misdiagnosed as being a dangerous form of leper when they really aren't. So the details, the tests that God gives, the criteria that God sets for these diseases, he's very precise with it just to make sure that neither one of those things happen. A leper is not missed and turned loose into society, and no one is falsely diagnosed as having a dangerous form of leprosy when in fact they don't. The highly infectious and fatal form of leprosy that primarily this chapter is interested in rooting out, we would call that today Hansen's disease, and that is named after the Norwegian scientist that discovered Mycobacterium leprae, which is the technical term for it, under the microscope in 1853, I believe it was. 1873, I believe. And it still exists today. We just call it Hansen's disease. It is largely and most commonly found today in areas that have the armadillo. Now, as strange as that sounds, it's true. And if you suspect that you might have leprosy, that is one of the questions that a hospital or the CDC would ask you. They'd say, have you been exposed to any armadillos lately? That's true. Now, because that's true, because armadillos are natural carriers of this bacteria that leads to leprosy in a human being, because of that, you don't see many cases of it within the United States. In fact, in the 48 contiguous United States, you can only, it just appears that the only place you can really catch leprosy nowadays in the 48 contiguous states is Southern California. Now, be careful. We have someone from California here. You just make of that what you want that to be. If you think that is a punishment for progressive policy down there in SoCal, punishment or plague from God, that's up to you. I'm not saying that. I'm not suggesting that at all in respect to our California visitor. We appreciate that visitor, so I wouldn't dare make that case, and I sure hope you're not thinking that. I don't know why you would be thinking that at all. It's not like it was brought up or anything, but on top of that, it can be contracted for some reason in Hawaii. Those really are the two areas in the 50 United States where people still get leprosy. And nowadays it is completely treatable and curable, unlike whatever it is that Melanie has tonight. is totally treatable and curable. So if it is detected nowadays within the first 6 months, then you've got a great chance of surviving, and leprosy really is not going to be the thing that takes you down. However, in the biblical era, Old Testament and New Testament, if you contracted the deadly form of leprosy, it was a death sentence. Someone once made the comment, and I forget who made the comment, or I would give credit on the quote, but someone once made the statement that leprosy, getting leprosy, deadly leprosy, was like dying 1 inch at a time. It was a slow and painful death. You'd get sores, leprous sores, all over your body. They'd spread. They'd cover your whole body. Those sores would open up. They'd be oozing and festering and stinking. It was disgusting. That disease would attack the nerve endings in the body. And because of that, and because of the fact that it also decreased circulation to the body, it is very common for a leper to experience or suffer the loss of digits, fingers and toes and ears and nose. Very common thing. The loss of sensitivity in the digits, well, that's just sort of obvious, isn't it? If you, you know, God gave us nerve endings in our body for a reason so that we could feel pain and go, I'm not supposed to be touching that. And, you know, you touch something hot and your nerve endings are healthy, you know that. But for a leper who wouldn't know that, they would do things that would wound their digits, their fingers and their toes, and not realize it. They would touch things and burn their fingers and toes and not realize it until they saw the smoke coming from their fingers and toes. So it was just a horrible way to slowly die. And normally within 5 to 20 years, the deadly form of leprosy would kill you. It would ultimately bring about your death. And I think at that time, it would feel like a relief and a release to you. Just a horrible, horrible life for a person to live back in these days before treatment and cures. Well, for chapter 13 tonight, let me give you a three-chapter outline just so that you can see what's coming up. Now, if you remember last week, I gave you a three-chapter outline. Chapter 11 was what goes into the body. Chapter 12 was what might come from the body, pregnant ladies. Chapter 13, I said, was what might be upon the body, leprosy. Now, tonight, I'm going to reset that breakdown. I'm going to give you a more detailed breakdown of this chapter and the next two chapters. Chapter 13 is laws for the detection of leprosy. Chapter 14, laws for the cleansing of leprosies. I think that'll be a very interesting study, and I'm going to try not to spoil my introduction for next week. There's stuff I just can't wait to share. I'll save it for next week. So chapter 13, laws for detecting leprosy or diagnosing leprosy. Chapter 14, laws for the cleansing of leprosy. And then chapter 15, laws for cleanliness in general. General guidelines and laws for the cleanliness of the human body. And if I were going to assign the equivalent terms of what these chapters teach us spiritually, I would call chapter 13 sin, chapter 14 salvation, and chapter 15 sanctification. So let me read back through those again and see if you can pick that up where I'm getting at. Chapter 13, laws for detecting leprosy, spiritual equivalent, sin. Chapter 14, laws for the cleansing of leprosy, spiritual equivalent, salvation. And then chapter 15, laws for general cleanliness, the spiritual equivalent, sanctification, living a clean lifestyle. So chapter 13, sin, Arlen, you really mean that? Chapter 13, spiritual lesson is about sin. Yes, I truly mean that. That is correct. That is the applicational draw of the chapter for the New Testament saint. Apart from that, I don't think we'd have any interest in the chapter. We're not priests, so we don't need to know how to diagnose leprosy. Might come in handy for some mothers and fathers when their kids come home from school and they've got something new that they got from the other kids at school and you want to figure out what it is. But apart from that, we're not priests. The sacrificial system, it doesn't exist anymore. There'd be no use for it, but there is a draw to this chapter for the Christian in the sense that it teaches us something very important. Leprosy in the Bible, not just in this chapter, but leprosy in the Bible is an illustration to us in New Testament times of sin. So if you will approach this chapter with that in mind, that leprosy is representative of sin, that the priest that you go to in order to be examined and evaluated, if you think of that priest as representing Christ, if you think of that individual getting evaluated as yourself, if you think of leprosy as sin, then when you're done with chapter 13, you're going to learn a lot about your Savior and you're going to learn a lot about your sin. Now, that is an evident connection that the Bible makes all throughout the Bible. Just like leaven, we see that same connection with leaven and sin. Leprosy, just as well, is seen as an intentional connection or tie-in to this representation to us of sin. And you can find it right off the bat in this chapter by the simple example of the fact that not once in this chapter, and then you can follow that out through the whole Bible, and not once in this chapter will you hear of a recovered leper being referred to as healed. A leper, according to the Bible, is never healed. He is what? Cleansed. So that sets the type in the Old Testament that maintains that type all through the Bible. If a person is healed of paralyzation, they're healed. If a person is healed of blindness, they're healed. If they're healed of a sickness, they're healed. But when it comes to leprosy and they recover miraculously or otherwise from leprosy, it's not a healing, it's a cleansing. The Bible tightly maintains that parallel, that connection to sin. So let's get going here and let's see if, you will catch those correlations. First of all, they're tough to miss. Second of all, don't worry, I won't let you miss them. I'll point them out to you. So verse 1 of chapter 13. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, verse 2, when a man has on the skin of his body a swelling, a scab, or a bright spot, and it becomes on the skin of his body like a leprous sore, that is, he suspects it might be leprosy, then he shall be brought to Aaron the priest or to one of his sons, the priest. Verse 3, the priest shall examine the sore on the skin of the body, and if the hair on the sore has turned white, I can guarantee you, you will not leave tonight hungry. I can set that truth down for sure. You will not leave this place hungry. A little queasy, perhaps. If the hair on the sore has turned white and the sore appears to be deeper than the skin of the body, of his body, it is a leprous sore. Then the priest shall examine him and pronounce him unclean. So God, in his incredible knowledge of microbiology, you know, this entire microbiological world that exists that we can't see with the naked human eye. God, in his knowledge of that and wisdom of how all of that works, gave Israel the symptoms that demanded the diagnosis of deadly leprosy. Any infected inflammation, wound, or discolored patch of skin, that was symptom number one. And if you had that as your first symptom, you needed to go see a priest, not a doctor, a priest. You needed to go see a priest. Sign number two, symptom number two was the hair inside or right around the wound or the infected area. If that hair had turned white, symptom number two, that you might have a deadly form of leprosy. But symptom number three was an important one. Symptom number three was the appearance of an infection that was under the surface of the skin. It indicated that there was a problem that wasn't just surface. This wasn't just a wound that was perhaps infected and free from leprosy. it was the indication that there was infection going on deeper than the skin, deeper than the flesh, inside of the body itself. In other words, there is a root to the problem. If the root is not there, if there's not the appearance of internal infection under the skin, then it wasn't leprosy. But if that third symptom was there, the appearance of that underneath infection, and those other two symptoms were there as well, then it was certainly a deadly leprosy. And so the first thing that we learn about sin from deadly leprosy is that sin is most easily identified when it becomes external through our words and actions. That's when we know sin exists within us. And it becomes obvious to those around us as well. It's that flare-up of the flesh, that swelling, that infection, and that sin comes out through your words and through your actions. But that's not the problem. That's not the issue. That is the production of the issue. That's the fruit of the issue. But there is a root problem behind that external sin of word or deed. And that problem, that sin problem, it is deeper than the skin. It's deeper than the flesh. It is internal to us. What I'm telling you is that sin, according to this typological correlation, goes all the way down to the heart. And Jeremiah told us that, the prophet, in Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9. He said, "The heart is deceitful above all things, and desperately wicked, who can know it?" Jesus said in Matthew chapter 15, verses 18 through 20, "Those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man." So just as leprosy was an external wound that showed the fruit of an internal problem, so it is the same with our actions of sin. Those sinful actions are merely the fruit of the root of the sin that is within us. And though not everyone in ancient Israel would be diagnosed with leprosy, unfortunately, I have to tell you that as a Christian and you come to Leviticus chapter 13 and you're learning the spiritual lessons and the spiritual principles from this passage, what you're going to discover is that every single one of us, Christian and non-Christian, we have this problem. We have this sin of leprosy within us, this root problem that goes down to the very core of our being, to our very heart. It is connected to our body. It is a terminable disease of sin that apart from a miracle work of God, we cannot be cured. What was the method of cure for a person with leprosy? How could they be cured in Old Testament times? It had to be a miracle from God. There was no other way. There was no other cure. If you had deadly leprosy, you were dependent upon a miracle from God. Well, the curse of sin within us, the disease of sin within us, is the same way. There is no cure. There's no pill that you can take. There's no self-help course that you can run yourself through. There's no power of positive thinking exercise that you can do in order to make yourself better or clean yourself of sin. That is a terminable disease within you, and it will be the death of you apart from a miracle of God. And church, that's what salvation is. It is nothing less than a miracle of God. It's the best miracle of God. It's the one I like to see the most. I would love to, you know, see everyone that I lay hands on and pray for just instantly healed. That would be pretty nice. I think our church would be more full. But I'm telling you, the miracle of God that I love to see the most is people giving their hearts to the Lord and seeing their countenance change when their sins are washed away, when they're gone from unclean status to clean status in the presence of God. I love that. Romans chapter 3, verse 10, there is none righteous, no, not one. Galatians chapter 3, verse 22, but the scripture has confined all under sin, that the promise by faith in Jesus Christ might be given to those who believe. And we can see this struggle of sin within the very nature of even a Christian, written about by the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 7, verses 14 through 25. Let me buzz through these real quick. It's important. I think you need to hear it. You're not the only one that struggles with these things. In my opinion, the greatest apostle to live, the Apostle Paul, he recognized this internal struggle, this infection that went deeper than just the words and actions that come out of a person, but that go all the way into the core of the human being. Paul said, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it is good." That's a confession. If you say, "Lord, I know I'm not supposed to be doing this. This is a sin. This is wrong. It's convicting me." That's a concession that the law is right about sin. Paul goes on to say, "But now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good, I do not find. For the good that I will do, I do not do. But the evil I will not to do, that I practice. Now if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. I find then a law, that evil is present with me, the one who wills to do good. For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man," that's the spirit. "But I see another law in my members, in my body, warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" And then he answers his own question in verse 25. "I thank God through Jesus Christ, our Lord. So then with the mind, I myself serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin." The fleshly body is still bound to that curse and that law of sin. Verse 4, Leviticus chapter 13, verse 4. "But if the bright spot is white," it's a patch of discoloration, right? "If the bright spot is white on the skin of his body and does not appear to be deeper than the skin, and its hair has not turned white, then the priest shall isolate the one who has the sore 7 days. So only one of three symptoms exist, but this guy doesn't get the all clear just yet. The priests need to give it some time so that they can reevaluate in 7 days, in 1 week time, and see which direction this thing is going to go. So they needed to quarantine or isolate that individual from the rest of the community for that time period until they could either give that person the all clear or make a more permanent decision with that person. Verse 5, "And the priest shall examine him on the 7th day, and indeed, if the sore appears to be as it was, and the sore has not spread on the skin, then the priest shall isolate him," quarantine him, "another 7 days. Verse 6, "Then the priest shall examine him again on the 7th day, and this is the second period of seven, so this would be the evaluation on the 14th day, the second week. "And indeed, if the sore has faded and the sore has not spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. It is only a scab, and he shall wash his clothes and be clean." So 14 days, he'll get the all clear. Now, if you're reading very keenly, yeah, we all thought that was going to be a microphone disaster, didn't we? If you're all reading very keenly, sharply, closely, you might be wondering, why bother putting this guy through the second period? Or actually, why bother putting this guy through the first period of 7 days? Because you're not going to give him the all clear anyway. If 7 days pass and there's been no progression of that sore, it hasn't gotten any worse, it hasn't spread, there's no white hair, it doesn't appear to be under the surface, but you're not going to give him the all clear anyway. You're going to make him go another 7 day period. So why not just make it a one period evaluation time of 14 days? And the answer to that question would be, you're not just looking to clear the guy as soon as possible. You're looking to detect leprosy as soon as possible. So you know you're not going to clear him before 14 days are up, but you may diagnose him as a leper within those first 7 days, and days matter. Days matter. Even in an isolation period, days matter. You want to get that guy identified as a leper, diagnosed as a leper as soon as possible, so that you can then work on the permanent solution with what to do with that guy. Verse 7, but if the scab should at all spread over the skin after he has been seen by the priest for his cleansing, he shall be seen by the priest again. So, you know, this is a guy that went through that 14-day period. After 14 days, he got the all clear, and he had to go through all of chapter 14, too. You got to remember this. He got the all clear. He was pronounced clean, but now he has to go through this all clear process that's found in Leviticus chapter 14, which involves sacrifice. This poor guy has gone through all of that because nothing has changed over those 14 days, and he thinks, thank the Lord, I'm in the clear. Let me bring my sacrifices. Let me go through the rituals and get the ritualistic all clear from the priests, and he does that, and then the next day or the day after, there goes that sore, and it just takes off, and it starts to spread, and what he needs to do is he needs to go back to that priest and be seen by that priest again. Verse 8, and if the priest sees that the scab has indeed spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is leprosy. And that provides another harsh lesson in the reality of sin. Sin, like leprosy, can begin very inconspicuously, but when it spreads insidiously. It starts small. Just like in the case of leprosy, you might not even know that it's leprosy. You have a sore and you think, well, that could be something. That could be a problem, but I don't know for sure. I got to examine that. I got to evaluate that. It's the same with sin. There are things in our lives where maybe we do them or we say them, and there's that initial hitch or catch in our spirit that brings our attention to what we just did or what we just said, and we think, was that a sin? Was that wrong? Have you ever been there? Okay, there's a couple of you that will admit that happens, and we think, Lord, is that wrong? What I said, what I did, is that wrong? I'm not really sure. I can't really tell. That is how inconspicuously sin can begin, and it's why we have to be cautiously on guard, evaluating our lives for those things. Because if we don't detect it, if we don't catch it, if we don't do the right thing and find the right prescription to get rid of the spread of that sin, that's exactly what it's going to do. It's going to spread. It is going to take over. And eventually, it can become all-consuming destruction in your life, in your family, in your relationships. That is the very message of James chapter 1, verses 14 and 15. James says, each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires or lust and enticed. Then when lust has conceived, it gives birth to sin. I like this part. It's so true. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. That's what sin does, just like leprosy. If it spreads, it takes over. Give sin an inch and it takes a mile. It just takes over your whole life. And before long, you find out the destruction that it has caused. It leads to spiritual death. So just like you wouldn't take leprosy lightly, you know, the slightest wound or scar or scrape, you'd run to the priest check me out, make sure it's not leprosy. I'm taking this seriously. I want to know. I want to consider early treatment if I get it. I want to know early detection. Well, just as you would take leprosy seriously, take sin in your own life seriously as well. Be on guard, be on the lookout, because unlike the case of the leper, when it comes to sin, we have instant help just waiting to help us to clean our hearts and our lives of that sin. Verse 9, when the leper's sore is on a person, then he shall be brought to the priest. Verse 10, and the priest shall examine him. And indeed, if the swelling on the skin is white and it has turned the hair white and there is a spot of raw flesh in the swelling, I told you you wouldn't leave hungry tonight. We're talking about now an open wound. Verse 11, it is an old leprosy. In other words, it is in a very late detection period. This person has had this leprosy for a while. These sores have opened up. They're oozing. They're gushing. It's gross. It's horrendous. It is an old leprosy on the skin of his body. The priest shall pronounce him unclean and shall not isolate him, for he is unclean. Does anything there sit weird with you? This guy is a guy that has leprosy all over his body. And he didn't get to the priest right away. This was detected very late, so his sores are bursting open. He's disgusting looking. He's pronounced to have leprosy by the priest. The priest says, unclean. But then the scripture says, do not isolate this man. Why? He's beyond isolation. Isolation in this chapter is only for the purpose of evaluation and examination. It's that first seven-day isolation, then the next seven-day isolation, 14 days of isolation. But listen, when you determine that a person has leprosy, you don't isolate them anymore. You're done evaluating them. You've pronounced them to be a leper. So what happens next? Not isolation, not quarantine, nothing temporary, but what happens next is total banishment. And we'll talk about that when we get to verses 45 and 46. So hold on to that thought for just a little bit. Verse 12, and if leprosy breaks out all over the skin, and the leprosy covers all the skin of the one who has the sore, from his head to his foot, wherever the priest looks. Verse 13, then the priest shall consider. And indeed, if the leprosy has covered all his body, he shall pronounce him clean, who has the sore. It has all turned white. He is clean. And right about now, you're probably freaking out. What is happening here? This guy has, we just read it, he has leprosy from head to toe. He is covered in leprosy. But the priest says, he's clean, all good. Go ahead, go back to work. Go ahead, go back to your family. Why is that? Well, it's in the details. We read it. It's in the details. This guy actually has a form of leprosy that is not contagious at all. This is a form of leprosy when it covers the entire body, that is, it's run its course, and what is left from that leprosy is not open wounds and sores and missing digits, but what's left from that leprosy is discolored white blotches of scaly, patchy skin on his body. That is not a deadly or infectious strain of leprosy. When a person gets leprosy from head to toe, it's going to go from bad to worse. Those wounds are going to start as swellings or scabs, and they're going to get worse. They're going to open up, right? This is a case where leprosy has run its course, and the skin has healed, and only white, patchy, blotchy skin remains. It's run its course. This guy has leprosy, but it's not contagious, and it's maybe deadly, maybe not deadly to the individual that has it, but to no one else. By the way, we do believe this is the form of leprosy that Naaman, the Syrian general, had in the book of Kings during the ministry of Elisha. If you're familiar with that story, he was a Syrian general. He was an active general in the Syrian military. He lived an active life. He had a wife, he had a maid, and he lived like a normal person, and no one around him seemed to be concerned about contagion. So we believe it was this form of leprosy that Naaman had. Now, that doesn't mean it wasn't deadly to Naaman. It may have been deadly to Naaman, but it wasn't contagious to other people. Either way, you can imagine how thrilled he was when, well, not at first, because Elisha didn't even come out to meet him. He was a VIP. He was an important general, and he expected a big fanfare and a big ado, you know, like you should come out and salute me and whatever. But Elisha didn't do that. He didn't make a big fuss over the guy. He didn't even go out to see him. He just stayed in his little shack there. He sent his servant out, and the servant had the message. Elijah said, go jump in a river. Well, not exactly. Elisha said, go dip 7 times in the Jordan River. The guy was affronted. He was aghast by that suggestion. The Jordan River was a dirty, filthy, muddy river. It was small. They had great rivers back in his hometown. He thought that'd be a better place. But a servant talked some sense into him. Perhaps you remember the story. He said, look, if he asked you to do some complicated, big thing, you would have done it. He only asked you to do something simple. Just go dip in the Jordan River 7 times. Why not just give it a shot? And so he did. Dip number one, number two, 7 times. And on the 7th time, he was not healed, but cleansed of leprosy. And 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 14 tells us that when he came up out of the water, his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child. I think they probably called him Babyface from then on out. Now, whether that was a miracle from God to cure Naaman of his complexion issues, or whether that was saving that man's life from a leprosy that wasn't contagious but could be deadly, either way, I'm sure he was thrilled that the Lord did that. But just keep that in mind. There are forms of leprosy that are not infectious and deadly. Verse 14, but when raw flesh appears on him, he shall be unclean. And the priest shall examine the raw flesh and pronounce him to be unclean. For the raw flesh is unclean. It is leprosy. Verse 16, or if the raw flesh changes and turns white again, he shall come to the priest, verse 17, and the priest shall examine him. And indeed, if the sore has turned white, then the priest shall pronounce him clean who has the sore. He is clean. So again, this is with this less serious case of leprosy. It's not contagious. The guy first shows up and he's just got the white blotches and patches of skin. Looks like the leprosy has run its course and done its damage. He's clean. But now here's this situation where that sore opens back up. The flesh wounds open back up. And for that period of time, he is to be considered unclean. If they go away again and it returns to white, patchy, blotchy skin, he's good to go again. He's clean and he can mix back into society. Verses 18 through 23 are the laws for diagnosing blisters to see if they are leprous or not. And I'll quickly read through those because these laws follow the same basic symptom examination that has already been laid out for us in this first case involving swellings, scabs, and bright spots, okay? So let's just read down through this. Verse 18, if the body develops a boil, a blister in the skin, and it is healed, the scriptures will say healed because it's not leprous. They'll use the word healed, but if it were leprous, they would say cleansed. Verse 19, and in the place of the boil where there comes a white swelling or a bright spot, reddish white, then it shall be shown to the priest, 20, and if when the priest sees it, it indeed appears deeper than the skin and its hair has turned white, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a leprous sore which has broken out of the boil, 21, but if the priest examines it and indeed there are no white hairs in it and it is no deeper than the skin but has faded, then the priest shall isolate him 7 days. And 22, if it should at all spread over the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a leprous sore. Verse 23, but if the bright spot stays in one place and has not spread, it is the scar of the boil, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. Verses 24 through 28 are the laws for diagnosing burns. Okay, we did, in the first section, we did swelling, scabs, and bright spots. Verses 18 through 23, we did blisters, and now we're going to do burns. Blisters and burns, those are wounds that a person can get, and they are subject to infection. And in a society where leprosy bacteria is a thing, then that's a concern. Something as simple as a burn or a blister could turn into leprosy. So all of that needed to be inspected by priests. I would think they were very busy ministry workers, I would have to think. So verses 24 through 28, the laws for diagnosing burns to see if they're leprous or not. Again, we'll just read through this because it follows the same system. Verse 24, or if the body receives a burn on its skin by fire and the raw flesh of the burn becomes a bright spot, reddish white or white, 25, then the priest shall examine it, and indeed, if the hair of the bright spot has turned white and appears deeper than the skin, it is leprosy broken out in the burn. Therefore, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a leprous sore. 26, but if the priest examines it, and indeed there are no white hairs in it, there are no white hairs in the bright spot, and it is not deeper than the skin but has faded, then the priest shall isolate him 7 days. 27, and the priest shall examine him on the seventh day. If it has at all spread over the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a leprous sore. 28. But if the bright spot stays in one place and has not spread on the skin but has faded, it is a swelling from the burn. The priest shall pronounce him clean, for it is the scar from the burn. Same basic method there. Verses 29 through 37 now are the laws for diagnosing sores in thick hair. So, you know, hair on the top of the head or beards, thick sections of hair, this is going to turn out slightly different. If it's leprosy, it's going to be different in thick sections of hair. The major difference being that leprosy under a thick section of hair, like the hair of your head or the hair of a beard, it is going to produce scaly skin and a different colored hair in the wound. So far, we've only been looking for one kind of color, right? If it's a wound, it's going to have white hair in it, and that's going to be leprous. I don't know what you do if you're older and your hair is already white. I guess you're just going to be a leper no matter what wound you get. Good luck. But now, for wounds that are in thicker sections of hair, we're looking for a different color of hair inside those wounds. Verse 29, if a man or a woman has a sore on the head or the beard, 30, then the priest shall examine the sore, and indeed, if it appears deeper than the skin, and there is in it thin yellow hair, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. This would be a perfect spot for a good blonde joke, but I definitely better pass on that. I'm in trouble tonight. I'm so sorry. So, thin yellow hair inside that wound, leprosy. Leprosy. It is a scaly leprosy of the head or beard. 31. But if the priest examines the scaly sore, and indeed it does not appear deeper than the skin, and there is no black hair in it, then the priest shall isolate the one who has the scale 7 days. Verse 32. And on the seventh day, the priest shall examine the sore. And indeed, if the scale has not spread and there is no yellow hair in it, and the scale does not appear deeper than the skin, verse 33, he shall shave himself, but the scale he shall not shave. Just leave that section unshaved. And the priest shall isolate the one who has the scale another 7 days. 34, on the seventh day, the priest shall examine the scale, and indeed, if the scale has not spread over the skin and does not appear deeper than the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. He shall wash his clothes and be clean. 35, but if the scale should at all spread over the skin after his cleansing, verse 36, then the priest shall examine him, and indeed, if the scale has spread over the skin, the priest need not seek for yellow hair. he is unclean. 37, but if the scale appears to be at a standstill and there is black hair grown up in it, the scale has healed. Again, healed is used because it's not leprous. He is clean, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. All right, now briefly, for two verses, we come back to those spots of skin discoloration for a little bit of clarity. There's going to be a caveat to those bright spots. Verse 38 and 39, if a man or woman has bright spots on the skin of the body, specifically white bright spots, then the priest shall look, and indeed, if the bright spots on the skin of the body are dull white, it is a white spot that grows on the skin, he is clean. So dull white spots are fine. They aren't leprous. And this would apply to any and all spots of skin discoloration on the individual that suspected they might have leprosy. It was the bright white spots that you needed to be concerned about. And I came up with a little rhyme here to help you remember this in your inspection of your children that come home from school when you're looking for leprosy. I mean, you do know that's the next thing, right, after monkeypox. I'm pretty sure it's going to be leprosy. That's the next pandemic. So just get ready for this. Here's a little test for these bright spots. Remember it like this. If it's bright white, it's leprous, all right. But if it's dull, it's not leprous at all. Aren't you glad you came to this Bible study tonight? Where else would you learn this stuff? I mean, just very practical, helpful stuff. All right, here is my absolute favorite section in the chapter by far, verses 40 through 44. Verse 40, as for the man whose hair has fallen from his head, he is bald, but he is clean. Right, folks? Folks, right there from the Bible says it is A-okay to be bald. Now, it doesn't quite say bald is beautiful, but I just think that's insinuated from the text, don't you? It's okay to be bald. Verse 41, he whose hair has fallen from his forehead, he is bald on the forehead, but he is clean. So the Bible takes that a step further. The Bible says it is okay to have a receding hairline. If you're bald on the forehead, that's okay. Just please don't do the comb over. I'm pretty sure that is a sin. If it's not, it should be. Don't do the comb over. No one needs that. Verse 42, and if there is on the bald head or bald forehead a reddish white sore, it is leprosy breaking out on his bald head or on his bald forehead. Verse 43, then the priest shall examine it, and indeed if the swelling of the sore is reddish white on his bald head or on his bald forehead, as the appearance of leprosy on the skin of the body, verse 44, he is a leprous man. He is unclean. The priest shall surely pronounce him unclean. His sore is on his head, or as the King James Version says here, his plague is in his head. I just love that wording. His plague is in his head, because I think that's where most of our plagues are. They're right there in our head. They're not real. But in this situation, it was real. That plague was right on his head, and there was no way to avoid that. He's bald. He's bald, and he's a leper. All right. Verses 45 and 46, finally, we come to the actions that would need to be taken in the case of a diagnosis of leprosy. You might want to make a note of that in some way. There's only these two verses that tell you that. Verse 45 and 46, actions taken against a leper, and they go far beyond just the pronunciation of uncleanness. Verse 45, now the leper on whom the sore is, his clothes shall be torn. This would be the first indicator to passerbys that this is a guy that you want to avoid. He has torn clothes, a telltale sign that he is a contagious leper. Telltale sign number one. And here's number two. And his head bare. They would need to shave their heads as another sign of leprosy. And number three, he shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. Now, said a different way, that just simply means that a person needed to announce to a passerby that they were a leper. So the Bible's saying, cover your mouth. If you're a guy, you could take this literally. Cover your mustache and cry out, unclean, unclean. That's so you say it and don't spray it. But it would be the same for a woman, just without the mustache. Cover your mouth and say it. Don't spray it. Don't infect the guy yelling at him that you're unclean and you're spraying him with saliva and infecting him. Cover your mouth and make that announcement. That really was the only thing that a leprous person could say to a non-leprous person. Unclean, unclean. That means steer clear, stay away, spare your life. This is another tie between leprosy and sin. Both of them train wreck your reputation and become your identity. That's what you become known as, a leper. But the spiritual side of that is whatever sin it is that consumes you and takes over and becomes that lifestyle that you practice, that train wrecks your reputation. Now, the world may not care, but it train wrecks your reputation in the church, and that sin becomes your identity. It takes over, whatever it is. Maybe you're a liar. That's your identity. Maybe you're an adulterer or idolaterer or fornicator or homosexual or thief or murderer, whatever that sin is that consumes you, that takes over and becomes your identity. And Christians from that point forward are going to have a difficult time seeing you in any other light than that identity. Am I right? If you know that someone left the Lord because of some sin, that is going to be difficult not to view that person through the identity of that sin. Nor do I think it should be the church's responsibility to not. I mean, that has nothing to do with judging people. That's not being judgmental. That's just being a good fruit inspector. It's seeing what comes from the tree. And in that case, it's pretty obvious that person left the Lord to pursue that sinful lifestyle. I think it's right for the church to say, yeah, that person used to be with us. Now they're an adulterer. Now they're a fornicator. Now they're an alcoholic, whatever the case might be. I don't think it's wrong for that to become the identity. That's part of what sin does. It's not our choice. That's what sin does to us when it destroys us and takes control like that. If it walks like a duck, swims like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. It's just a duck. It's sin. Verse 46, he shall be unclean. All the days he has the sore, he shall be unclean. He is unclean. I think the Lord wants to make sure we don't miss the point here. And he shall dwell alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. So this is the final tie then between leprosy and sin. Here's the last thing that sin will do to you. It will separate you from fellowship with God and fellowship with God's people. For the person that was unclean, ceremonially unclean, in Old Testament times, we've talked about this before, it meant that they could not go into the sanctuary. Now, later on, with the creation of synagogues, those Jewish places to come together and study the scriptures, have Bible study outside of the temple, same thing. For those synagogue services, the leper could not participate in them. The leper could not take in a Bible study. The leper could not go to worship. Their fellowship with God was symbolically broken, their relationship with God broken, and their fellowship with the community, the people of God, completely broken. Now, it's really the same thing with sin in the church. Sin that takes place in the Christian and takes control and takes over and pulls the church, the Christian out of the church. The difference there would be that in the case of the leper, that was a forcible banishment from the city. They were forced, banished, excommunicated, disfellowshipped, and sent outside the community to live in a leper colony. And it was a forcible thing. The difference with that connection, that tie-in between leprosy and sin, is that it is almost never necessary that the church be the one to forcibly excommunicate a sinner. It just really doesn't happen all that much. I have had to do that before, but it really doesn't happen all that much. Why? because it's part of the process of sin. Just as leprosy separated them from God and from God's people, sin does the same thing. If sin takes over, if we give it root and we let it grow and it consumes our life and we become a practicing sinner that is not repentant of that sin is going to drag you away from your fellowship with God, and it's going to drag you away from your fellowship with God's people. Before long, you notice, they don't come to church as much anymore. They're missing more often. They're not taking their church attendance very seriously. And before long, you don't see them at all. They're just gone. Why? They found a new crowd, a new group of people they feel comfortable with. For a leper, what was the only human socialization they got? Other lepers. They were in leper colonies, and I think it's the same with the sinner. People leave here, and they usually blame it on the church. They'll say, well, the pastor said this, or the attendees did that, and that's why I left. I just don't feel comfortable around those people anymore. I don't feel loved and wanted there anymore. We all know we're not the problem, usually. Usually, it's not us that didn't want them. It's them. After sin has done its work in them, that have separated themselves from us. They no longer feel comfortable in the company of the saints. Now they only feel comfortable around those engaged in the same sins as they are. So, church, that is what sin running rampant in the heart and life of an individual will do. It will drag you right out of the community of faith, stick you in the world, and the only people you'll feel comfortable with are other lepers. Other sinners, just like you. But the great news for the sinner, unlike the leper, at any point, anyone who wants out of that leper colony of sin, it is just a prayer away, and the Lord will bring you back with open arms, and the church will welcome you in reluctantly, enthusiastically, and you're a part just like that. God is so gracious and so merciful. Well, I tell you what, verses 47 through 59, let's try to do this. I know it's getting late and I'm going a little over. Let's try to do this, though. Should we order for pizza? No. Okay, let's just do this real quick. Rob said yes back there. Smart man. He's hungry. This talk about oozing sores and scabs, it doesn't bother him. He's ready for pizza. Verses 47 through the end of the chapter are for laws diagnosing leprous mold and mildew on clothing and possessions. So real quickly, also if a garment has a leprous plague in it, whether it is a woolen garment or a linen garment, verse 48, whether it is in the warp, those are the threads running lengthwise in a garment, or the woof, that's a dog, yep. No, those are the threads running crosswise in a garment. So whether it's in the warp or woof of linen or wool, whether in leather or in anything made of leather, and if the plague is greenish or reddish in the garment or in the leather, whether in the warp or in the woof, the lengthwise threads or the crosswise cross threads, or in anything made of leather, it is a leprous plague and shall be shown to the priest. The priest shall examine the plague and isolate that which has the plague 7 days. And he shall examine the plague on the seventh day. If the plague has spread in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof, in the leather or in anything made of leather, the plague is an active leprosy. It is unclean. He shall therefore burn that garment in which is the plague, whether warp or woof, in wool or in linen or anything of leather, for it is an active leprosy. The garment shall be burned in the fire. But if the priest examines it, and indeed the plague has not spread in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof, or in anything made of leather, then the priest shall command that they wash the thing in which is the plague, and he shall isolate it another 7 days. Then the priest shall examine the plague after it has been washed, and indeed, if the plague has not changed its color, though the plague has not spread, it is unclean. You shall burn it in the fire. It continues eating away, whether the damage is outside or inside. If the priest examines it, and indeed the plague has faded after washing it, then he shall tear it out of the garment, whether out of the warp or out of the woof or out of the leather. But if it appears again in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof or in anything made of leather. It is a spreading plague. You shall burn with fire that which is the plague. And if you wash the garment, either warp or woof or whatever is made of leather, if the plague has disappeared from it, then it shall be washed a second time and shall be clean. This is the law of the leprous plague in a garment of wool or linen, either in the warp or woof. Had to get that in there one more time. Or in anything made of leather to pronounce it clean or to pronounce it unclean. Now, you may not have known that there can be a leprous mold or mildew building and spreading within a garment, but apparently the scriptures say this was a possibility. A soft material like a piece of clothing or a piece of leather, it could carry that leprous bacteria and it could spread. So here's my suggestion. You know, we read the possibilities that if you think there's this mold or mildew that could be leprous growing in your garments, you can go through this priestly process and, you know, he might say, oh, it's fine after a few days and just go wash it and you'll be fine. Wash it a few times just to be sure. Or he may cut off a little section. I mean, how's that going to work? Like you go to church and you got a big square missing from right here. Oh yeah, that was leprous last week. But it's gone now. I'm fine. That square, it's gone. Here's my suggestion, okay? I think this, you know, sometimes you read these Old Testament laws and you go, well, this just makes sense for my day. And here's what makes sense to me. If your garments, if your clothing have some green or red mold or mildew or fungus growing on them, please do yourself a favor. Just burn those things. In fact, maybe take your washer and dryer and just throw those away too. Maybe tear out the floor in your laundry room and take down the drywall and just build back better. Now, not like we're doing in America. Not like we're doing in America right now. I mean, really build back better. Just start over because there's a problem there and it needs to be fixed so that that fungus is not among us. I don't want to be sitting next to you in church and look over and see this science project growing on your shirt. So let's just get that taken care of. I think that's the wise thing to do. Of course, the spiritual issue, the more important thing, is the spiritual fungus among us that we need to be on guard for, watching for. And I don't care how valuable it is. It might be your clothing that's causing you to stumble for the Lord. It might be some possession that you have in your house that is causing you to stumble. I don't care how valuable that is. I say, don't even try to make it work. Just take that thing, get it out of your house, get it out of your heart. Don't let it take over. Stop the spread, stop the infection, stop the infestation, and just have a clean heart before the Lord. Stand with me. Thank you for the extra 6 minutes tonight. Let's pray.